I promised to finish a few slides from last week. These are some advice that may prove useful to you once you start working at the university. If you remember, I was talking about a lot of things related to being a university faculty professor. I talked a little bit about the things that I did with my research group, mission statement, room. These kind of things are very important. You can start doing them wherever you are, really. If that is not done in your research group here, you can suggest it. It's a good idea to welcome and to say goodbye to people. There are tangible benefits of being a good teacher, a good mentor. I gave you two examples. One of the greatest teachers I met, Adolf Grünbaum, beautiful story of his former student. Another, maybe more modest in terms of the amount of money, but very inspiring example of a woman who was offered a stipend and then she repaid it years later after having a successful career. And then I talked a little bit about my research group. We had several things that we did together for the sake of integration, for just, you know, general bringing up those people to become successful researchers themselves. Going out to nature, and then some of the things that we did, I told you about the meetings, business meetings, just lunch and talking and handling day-to-day affairs, plus research meetings, presentations, discussions. Sharing the work has to be also real. There are always too many chiefs, too few Indians, as Americans say it sometimes. Then mission statement, real product, bringing yourself to the level of doctoral students. That was a good idea. I think I had never regretted it. My people were just my younger colleagues. There was always mutual respect. I was trying to give the best of myself. They were learning also from me. I think we stopped somewhere here, and there's just a handful of slides I wanted to finish. You can work at any place, so I don't think it's a good idea to tell people you have to be here for 8 hours a day, because that's, you know, some people like it, and it's a good idea to actually have working hours and then go home and rest. But you shouldn't force people to do that. I had a guy who was... For several years, at least 2-3 years, he was working at nights. He would come to the lab at 4 or 5 p.m. and then stayed until early morning hours. That proved to be not very healthy for him. A few years later, he decided to work at a normal schedule. I don't think it's a good idea to, in the long term, to work at night and then sleep during the day. But he did that. Nothing wrong with that. And the main thing is the scientific output is the most important, of course. So how you do it, it's another story. Everybody has preferred times and places to work. Actually, from that guy, I learned to work in coffee shops. Coffee shops have this white noise that, you know, you can kind of filter it out. And I just get coffee, sit there, read the paper for a couple of hours, think. That's another place where you can work. There's an inspiring story. Henry Ford hired a consultant to check if there is anything that he could do to improve the efficiency of his factories. And the guy walked around for a week, talked to different people, analyzed, made notes, did some modeling, and then came back a week later to Henry Ford and said, Mr. Ford, I'm very impressed. Your factories are very efficient. The production line that you invented is really a good idea. So really, I don't see many opportunities for improvement. But there's one person. Every time I went to him and asked, what are you doing? He said, I'm doing nothing. So I think you can easily fire him. That's going to bring you some savings in the salary. There's going to be not a very big loss. Walt Disney made sure that he meant the guy. He's at the corner office southwest. Yes, the corner office southwest, the first floor. So Ford said, I'm sorry, I cannot fire him, because with his ideas, he has brought me over $300,000 in savings. $300,000, early 20th century, that's much more now. He brought me that much in savings by his good ideas, and he has his best ideas when he's doing nothing. So remember that the effect is important, not necessarily, you cannot bind creative work in a given place and time. People have sometimes good ideas when taking shower, hiking, running, riding a bicycle, so just give freedom to people. Another thing that is a good idea, that last thing, is you want to create a healthy competition. You want them to think, okay, I want that too. Not envying their colleagues, but trying to imitate them, trying also to get the best out of themselves. So what I did is I gave them small rewards. The first paper published, I would buy them an iPod or an iPad or a Palm Pilot, that was that time, or an iPhone. You know, something that I had money for from grants. And it was a very nice token of appreciation. A new desk chair, for example. So small things that essentially, you know, you tell it at the meeting to everybody. So they see it's inspiring. They want that too, of course. And now the last things are some pitfalls. Pitfalls are the dangerous things that that you have to watch out for. Pitfall is, I guess, in Polish, I would say pułapka. The first thing is when you start out, you get your doctorate, you are an independent researcher, you feel desperate for students. You want to, at a conference, you meet your colleagues that you met, of course, during the doctoral studies, and you say, oh, well, Bob is my doctoral student. So nice to say, okay, I have doctoral students now. So we feel very often desperate to have students, and we want to give them everything, do things for them, enthusiasm, protection, ideas, etc. Be careful. In my case, people whom I gave everything of myself in the very beginning, very rarely things worked out with them. They really have to have that inside them. So you create good environment for them, you obtain money so that you can pay them. It's a little different in Poland, although it's nice to have grants also here to give them extra money above the stipend. Anyway, focus on funding so that it's attractive for people to get into your lab. That creates competition, you can get the best people. And if a student is, you judge the student not well prepared, or there are some problems that you don't like, then don't feel guilty, bad rejecting that student. For example, I have a rule, and I've had that rule for 20-something years. I don't accept a student who is working full-time outside of the university. That's my rule, again. There are successful people who work full-time on a different topic than do their PhD, but it's so hard. My experiences with that have been really very, very bad. It's very difficult for the student, and the student cannot kind of devote his or her life completely to research. And frankly, nothing ever came, in my case, nothing came out of students who were serving two masters. Somewhere, working somewhere to get money and then study. Of course, there are different situations. You know, sometimes they have to work. If they are very motivated, they will make it. But in my case, it just didn't work. So I said to myself, yeah, no, I'm not doing it. It's a waste of time from my perspective. So certain rules. I don't accept students who, you know, whatever, who don't impress me. You have to be good for them, but don't overdo it. They have to do it by themselves, remember. So just create the environment for them, and they have to do it themselves. The next thing is, I mentioned it earlier, laboratory space. It's very important to have your people close to you in one place. And it's a very sensitive issue in academic environments, because space is always very scarce. This is a joke here. We promise you a big lab. Lab is an abbreviation of Labrador. It's a race of a dog. So we promise you a big lab. Here it is. Yes. It's a delicate issue, sensitive, but when you are hired, when you are offered a job, that's a good moment to discuss this, to say, well, can I get some space for my students, for my people, for my lab? Because once if you don't get it, it's going to be harder to get it later. The next thing is university administration. Some universities, this may be a joke, public and state-supported, that was University of Pittsburgh, state-supported, they are very bureaucratic. And I have to say, I have to frankly admit that the bureaucracy in a Polish university is just overwhelming. It's worse than in the public and state-supported universities in the U.S. So there are things that are just funny, you know. There is somebody in this administration who tells you, no, you cannot print the dissertation on this kind of paper. Too expensive, right? Even though you pay for the paper yourself out of your grant. So a lot of obstacles, a lot of administrative things, a lot of forms, stamps, signatures. You must have experienced it already, unless you are used to it. But it's just very bad. And the higher you look in the hierarchy, the worse it is. So it's just that. I had a short lecture on the topic. I scanned. I wanted a kettle to make tea in my office. The form that allows me to buy it, or allows for somebody to buy it, had 3 or 4 signatures and 4 stamps. That was just ridiculous. The kettle was, whatever, 80 zloty, is such a waste of time for the administrators. So small things. And there are 3 sins in Poland that I find that make it very difficult for us to get anywhere. I call them the 3 names. Impossibilism. It's impossible. You will not ever change it. The second is tumivishism. It's I don't care, right? Attitude, to me vicious. And the third one is, I always forget it. It will come up to me. It's a longer one, but I forgot. But I mean, these are the sins, and they are enforced by the, strengthened by the administration. So how do you deal with that? I think the best thing is just to use personal charm. Smile going somewhere. Just smile, be very polite, and most of the time you will get what you need, what you want, and that's that works everywhere, not only in university. Just personal charm. If that doesn't work, you can sometimes, once in a while, remind them that university is a place where we train people, and faculty. Most of you will be faculty, if not all. Faculty are there to do that main piece of work. Administration is to support it. Sometimes they would like to be the main people in the university. Faculty is just a headache. Students, the best university is one where there are no students, of course. And the faculty also. So if they are very difficult, just remind them that they are here to support you. But I don't have to do it too often. Just, you know, once in a while, very early. Typically just personal charm. Just smile and be polite. Usually you get what you want. And, of course, you have to work to reduce the bureaucracy. Sometimes it happened that I refused things. One of the rectors, not the current one, the previous, there was a rule that when you write, fill out the forms for your periodical evaluation, there were things like publications, doctorates you supervised, reviews. They wanted me to provide proof that I did that. So they wanted me to, I guess, contact the journal and ask them for a certificate that I really reviewed something, or that I was really the supervisor of a doctorate. I said, no, that's insulting to me. I'm telling the truth, here it is, I wrote it, I filled the forms, I signed it. That's the truth. If you want to check it, go ahead. So what happened is I refused, and then a few weeks later I get an email from the rector. Really, rector, can you imagine? Rector is bothered with these kind of things. So I responded, Mr. Rector, if you want to confirmation that I was a doctor, supervisor of a doctorate, this is public information. You can find it. And I found one or two. Okay, here it is. You can check it. I found a couple of two, three things, and I said, well, I really felt a little insulted by that. I have to prove that I'm innocent. That's not the way things should work. You have to be, you know, full of, you have to be, have some minimal kind of, you know, feel like some value. You cannot just be, you know, moved around by administrators. So sometimes you do that. It happens to me. I had a couple of times interactions with the rector, kind of a little bit harder. I even have on my webpage somewhere the letters I wrote, open letters, so they're open. So that sometimes happens, but not too often. You don't want to waste your time on these kind of things, but sometimes it's definitely worth it. Administrative duties. When you are a scientist, you have to do a lot of... We'll talk more about this today in the context of time management. So as you have to learn to refuse. That's important. In the beginning, you say, yes, 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 that's very honorable, that's, you know, reviewing is nice, being member of some committee is very honorable, very prestigious, but at some point you have to learn to decline, because you cannot... the alternative is dying under the pressure of things. So, not yet, but at some point you have to learn to decline that. Be careful, because you cannot decline all the time. People who are declining all the time, they are taking the benefits, but never giving out of anything out of themselves. I call them wells, studnie. You know, you throw in something into them, the best you get the echo, but you never get anything out of them. So you have to do things, your share, but not everything. So learn to decline. Sometimes students have problems, problems of different nature. Students means you, doctoral students. You have to recognize that early, and then try to help them. If you give them freedom of time and place to work, some students cannot handle it. You know, they interpret this as, I can do nothing if necessary. Yes. So don't wait too long, and if you notice decreased performance, just point it out, saying, well, I haven't heard from you too long, what happens, what's going on? Ask if there's any way you can help, and maybe a little bit of pressure. If you give people enough time, they will impress you. That's from Randy Pausch's lecture. But sometimes you need a little bit of, I don't mean strong pressure, nothing frustrating, but just asking. I remember one of my master's students' thesis advisors. He used to call me. He did it once or twice. He called me on my phone. I answered. He says, oh, here's Ad van der Hoor. I haven't seen you for 3 weeks. I was wondering everything was all right, you know. Very, very gentle pressure. Well, I should show up. I should produce something. I should bring something to impress him. That was actually quite nice. Very gentle pressure. If things don't work out, you know, we try for a few semesters, for a year, for a couple of years, it's okay to give up, to say, well, I'm sorry, but I don't think it's working out. And it happened to me a couple of times that I actually gave up on a student. I really, it took a long time, but it happened. In the beginning, especially in your first year like you are, in many places, I don't know about you, but students focus on things that are unimportant, like courses, exams, reading, browsing, trying not looking around too much. You have to look around. You have to do things. But taking exams, you are very good at it already. It's not something that you can use to impress other people. So as soon as possible, get into research. And as a supervisor, you have to also put a little bit of pressure, you know, look at that, read that, talking about doing research, because it's the research that gets you out with a degree out of here. You can take all the courses, you can pass all of them, but you can still be so-called ABD, all but dissertation. You've done all the requirements but the dissertation. The dissertation is research, so you have to definitely make sure that they do that. Responsibilities, share responsibilities with everybody. We talked about this all. Freedom in time and place of work, I mentioned that. Send students to conferences. And being a role model is important. So they should see you, and you should make it worth imitating. This is really important. Nominating students for various awards, just, you know, helping them with their career. Small incentives, praising for achievements, for good things. When it's a poor piece of work, let it know. Gently, but let it know also individually. Praise them in groups, but criticize individually. If the student is very smart, but a little obstinate, doesn't listen to you, your advice, that's okay. You should just leave the student the freedom, I think. Let them figure it out by themselves. Usually they will waste time. Not always, though. Sometimes you can be wrong, of course. There is a few things that I wanted to recommend to you. If you search, I checked, this is not an up-to-date link, I'm afraid, I think. I did change it in my slides, but didn't put the newest version of the slides. But search for this, Marie-Lise Jardin's How to Be a Good Graduate Student Advisor. You can find it in many places. This is a kind of classic. Marie-Lise Jardin, I met her, she was a... I met her when she was just 2-3 years after her PhD. She wrote a book about an article. It's actually an article. You can find it in many places. How to be a good PhD student. Definitely read it. And there's also some things about being an advisor. She went to work in industry, not in academia, but she's a good researcher, definitely doing good things. There are also books about it. If you look for her paper, you will find other links to things that would be useful, will give you some good advice. And the last remarks, I guess, you know, it's really not a part-time job. It's a full-time job because they see you in all kinds of circumstances, not just between 9 and 5. Sometimes you meet with them in the weekend, call, talk. Mentoring is really taking care of the younger colleagues, the way you mentor your children. When you bring up your children, you spend, it's a full-time job. The children can run to you in the middle of the night, "I cannot sleep, Daddy," right? That can happen, of course, not this way, but you may have to give attention to your people. Good. So today, I hope I will finish that if I don't talk too long about things. I may sometimes appear talking very, very fast and we don't have enough time for things like discussions, but keep in mind that this course is really very compacted and we don't have a lot of time, 1.5 hours per meeting. That's not a lot, really. So, balancing life... time management, balancing your life, and making effective use of time. That's what the topic today is. This is the before last meeting today. Hopefully it's going to be fun, because I'm pretty sure that you now think that you have too much work, that you are dying under the pressure of work. And that's not an unusual thought, an unusual feeling. I had that when I was a PhD student. We were complaining in one of our courses. The courses that are in most U.S. universities, you have to earn a grade, not just passing-failing. Passing-failing, like in this seminar, it's your presence. You have to be here. Actively, not just focusing on some irrelevant things like the two ladies there. Decide whether you want to be here or not. In any case, I'm from my side, I'm giving you the best I can. If it's not interesting enough, well, I feel really bad about it. But I'm trying my best. So, but in U.S. universities, it's you have to earn a grade also. There are projects and things to do. So once we were complaining, he is giving us so much to read, you know, like 3 papers per week to read by the next meeting. And he laughed and said, well, look at this pile of papers. And there was a pile like this. And he said, I have to read this every day, this much. And we were laughing, no, that's impossible. You know, he was joking. But actually, the further you go, there's more work. So we have to, earlier or later, think about how to manage our time so that we don't die. Because the alternative is to die. There's a word in Japanese, I think, dying out of work, right? Being overworked to the death. So at some point you will be definitely under the pressure. So I'm going to talk about today about two things. First is time management, then management of stress. Stress is also guaranteed. You may have experienced it already. Stress, pressure, there will be more. There will be more stress. The only thing that you can maybe will be better, you will learn to handle it, handle the stress. Time management. Here is a survey in 1999. I don't think it's changing drastically from year to year on how much different things take in faculty life. Faculty life, university professor doing work. Most of the time we spent on teaching. That takes a lot of time. And then research and service. Now research is probably the most important because that is where your scientific output comes from. You cannot really reduce it too much. You have to spend time on research. And the biggest pressure comes from teaching, I think. And also service. Service is reviewing, taking part in committees, all kinds of administrative things. This is all service. The first thing, the first advice that I would like to give you, this is not my calendar, I just got it from a picture from the internet somewhere. Buy yourself a calendar, just out of curiosity. Who does not have a calendar? You work without a calendar? You don't. I frankly admire you. My wife used to, for a long time, have no calendar, and I was really very impressed by that. But she does use a calendar. You know, that at some point you'll have to. I was always very serious when I was a young man. But when I moved to the Netherlands, I was 24 then, I felt like a fish in the water. People are so well organized. You make an appointment, and you are there. You know, they remember, you remember, they are there pretty much on time, and you meet. If you miss a meeting, they will ask you a little ironically, when is your birthday? The idea is that you tell when your birthday is, they will say, oh, I'll get you a calendar for your birthday. Essentially, ironically, you know, you have to get better organized. Once I remember, sorry for that anecdote, but it really tells you a little bit about the Netherlands and how things should be in that respect. There were no cell phones, email, no email at that time. That was early 1980s. So usually you picked up the phone, stationary phone, you make an appointment, you kept the conversation short. Dutch are very cost conscious, I would call it, say it. So the conversations are short, you just make an appointment, the conversation takes 1 or 2 minutes, you save the costs of calling. And one day a colleague called me and said, "Why would you like to join me for dinner, for supper?" 6 o'clock, that's dinner time in the Netherlands. And he proposed a date that was like a month in advance. He said, on a Tuesday. I said, I was working at that time, so there was a different town. No Google Maps, so I would have to buy a map of that town to find his place. I've never been there before. I had never been there before. So we agreed on a date, and he said, you will be coming by train, probably. What time will you take your train? I said, well, no idea, that's a month in advance, I don't know. And he said, well, there is a train at 5:21 and then 5:51. Which one will you take? Okay, I'll take the 5:21 train. He said, okay, I'll wait for you at the station. That saves me, of course, buying a map and finding his apartment. And I thought to myself, I'll show you. I didn't call, I didn't confirm, I did nothing. I just stepped on the train, went to that other town, and here he was waiting for me at the station. A month later, without any confirmation. And I was devastated. I thought, well, at that time in Poland, I would forget about this. He would not be waiting for me in the on the station, and the train would be late also. So that was really devastating. I realized how convenient it is to remember about things, to just plan it and do it. And you also build your reputation. You make an appointment, you are there. When you forget about things, you don't show up, okay. How can people trust you more important things if you cannot even keep an appointment? So that's very important. The first thing is, if you want to organize your life, then have a calendar. But the important thing is, look at it. I have a habit of looking at my calendar every evening before I go to bed to remind myself what I'm going to do the next day. The few times that I forgot about something, and one day I forgot about something terribly, there were master's thesis defenses, and I completely forgot about it. Luckily, I was already, I took shower, had taken shower and dressed already. I'm getting a phone call, where are you? The defenses started 10 minutes ago, okay? That was terrible. And that was a new secretary. I built quite a reputation. Now, every time I have a defense, and she organizes defenses, I go to her and I'm saying, I'm here, jokingly. That never happened again, of course, but I built a reputation with a new secretary. She thought, I cannot be trusted. So I was late for the first two defenses, really bad. So look at it, because you may, what good is it to write if you don't look at it? Yes? So look at it regularly, so that you don't forget things. A calendar is not good enough, because as you see, this guy's calendar is full of things. So you need to also know your priorities. Two nice quotes essentially saying, you need to know what is important and what is even more important. Don't spend your time on unimportant things. In this context, remember, I said that a couple of times, I'm a very curious person. One day there was an announcement for a workshop at the university. There are regular workshops trying to improve the faculty and the students. There was a workshop on time management, and I thought, wow, that's a nice workshop. I need that. So I went there, and the lady showed the following table. That's coming from a book by Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm pretty sure it was translated in Polish, so you can find it in the help section. He's writing about time management and doing things. Anyway, the story that the lady said was very nice. I kind of remembered it. I remembered it for good. That's the one thing I learned in that workshop. The 2 hours of the workshop were absolutely well spent because I learned that. And that makes a lot of sense. So two dimensions. Important. Something is important or not important. And then urgency. It's urgent or not urgent. So, what are the examples? Urgent and important, your baby is crying. You need to change the diaper or give food. The kitchen is on fire. You have to immediately throw everything and then put out the fire. Some phone calls, your advisor is calling and saying, well, listen, right? You have to pick up. And you cannot just say, I'm going to answer later. You answer. Unimportant and urgent are interruptions, somebody comes to your office, some distractions, there's a beep, something is posted on Twitter or whatever your favorite social media are. Other calls, somebody is calling you, a friend, an acquaintance, somebody trying to sell you solar panels and whatever. These are unimportant, but you know, they are calling now, it's urgent. And then there are not urgent but important, the exercise. If you don't exercise, you'll get fat, you'll get less healthy. You have to exercise, you have to move. Whatever you do, you have to move. But it's very easy not to do it, because it's not not urgent. It's important, but not urgent. Planning, sitting down, what do I do? How do I organize my career? What do I want to accomplish this year? These are very important things, but not yet urgent. And then there is the fourth thing, unimportant and not urgent. These are, you know, getting a newspaper, turning on the TV, browsing through the social media, you know, unimportant and unurgent. And Covey says, you want to be all the time here. If you are here all the time, then you don't want to be here ever. Just cut out all the things that you judge it yourself, that are unimportant and not urgent. Just don't do it. Don't do it even. Don't go there. I never had the habit of reading newspapers, but I had heard convincing arguments. Don't read newspapers. Today, it's equivalent of that is browsing through some news through the media. I haven't had a TV for more than 50 years. That's true, really. When I left my hometown, there was a TV in the student building dormitory, but I didn't watch it. I didn't have the time to sit there with everybody and watch it. I have a TV set, but no antenna. We watch movies. We decide, okay, today we will watch a movie. We have a collection of DVDs, or find a movie somewhere online. But that's, you know, just relaxing. My wife and I, just, you know, that's part of important things. Socializing with her. Laughing together or crying together. That's an important thing. But not just browsing, changing channels, listening to the junk that they are feeding you. Okay, and if you are here, you never need to be there. That's the lesson that Covey says. If you are here, you are solving all the problems in advance, and this will not happen, essentially. The same is said by this guy. Hard work is often the easy work that you did not do at the proper time. If you do it on time, then it's actually easy. You plan it, you do it. Plan your time is very important. And also, an important thing is make appointments with yourself. So, reserve the best time of your day for the most important things, for the creative things. All of you are doing creative work. Ideas, maybe writing, thinking about how to do things. One advice that I got from one of my people in my PhD committee, a psychologist, Baruch Fischhoff, he was in one of the first pages of the first class. He said, some people think that professors are smarter than people in the industry. I don't think so, he said. They are just working in a different mode. What does a director of a company, how does they look like? Well, they get to work at 7:30, half an hour or an hour before the secretary, to process the things that they couldn't finish last the day before, answer some emails, do some signatures, look at the papers they have to do. Half past 8, the secretary comes, gives them more work to do, tells about some phone calls that happened, and 9 o'clock, the first meeting. The first meeting lasting, say, an hour. 10 o'clock, they have 15 minutes in the office. In the meantime, there were some phone calls. The secretary left some notes that there were phone calls you need to call. They make some calls back. 10:30, another meeting, some working group. Then another meeting, then a business lunch. Then 2 o'clock, they have to go to the client. 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, all kinds of meetings, all kinds of urgent things. 5:30, 6 o'clock, they are half dead. They go home, sit down, and the only thing they can do, keeping their eyes open, is maybe using the TV remote to browse through some programs because they have no energy to do anything else. They're just so tired. What does a professor do? Or a PhD student? Or somebody doing creative work? Your responsibilities are very limited. You have a few classes to need to show up to, but not that many. I have classes to teach also. I have classes that I teach on Wednesdays and Thursdays, sometimes on Tuesdays. What do I do on Mondays? I stay at home. I take it easy, wake up, I exercise. Then I do something important. I can think, yes? Nobody is disturbing me. Friday is the same. Weekend, at least one day, really important things, like family, yes? But otherwise, the difference between the two modes of operation is not how hard you work, because I also work hard. We also work hard. But you have those uninterrupted times where you can think. That's the big difference. And that makes you better in creative things than somebody working in the executive mode. So use it wisely by making appointments with yourself. Just say, no, I'm. If somebody proposes you a meeting, well, try to make the meeting adjacent to other things like teaching or something, so that you don't need to interrupt your free morning or free afternoon or free day. Just manage it so that you can make appointments with yourself that are longer. Longer chunks of time are important. Planning is important. This is $1 million advice. If you send me a check, each of you, 10 years from now, for how much this advice is worth, I will be very wealthy. I will not worry about my retirement. Essentially, planning. What I sometimes do, and I advise it to my students, make a plan. You want to get your dissertation or your thesis submitted by the end of June. Okay, we have the beginning of May. Make marks. What do you want to accomplish? And then follow that plan. Adjust it, of course, because things change. But plan. That's a very good advice. People who plan are essentially working more efficiently because they know what they are doing. If you look at the history, Bolsheviks, for example, or Fidel Castro, even more recently, the LGBT organizations, they have a long-term plans. Bolsheviks, they knew they will not stop until they get full power. So when there was a revolution in February of 1917, it took just a few months before they overturned the provisional government in October, just a few months later, and grabbed the whole power. Fidel Castro pretended to be a good Catholic, good citizen. When he walked into Havana, he was wearing a wooden cross on a rope on his breast. His plan, long-term plan, was getting the power in Cuba and thinking long-term. He knew what he wanted. All the intermediate steps were essentially, he planned them. In terms of the last one I mentioned, LGBT, I think that the agenda is clear. We can see it from all other countries where this happened. Is the partnerships legalized, marriages legalized, and then the million-dollar thing, adoption of children. That's what happened, at least historically. So when people are saying, for some politicians, no, this is just about visiting each other in the hospital, that's not true, essentially, because we know by looking at other countries exactly how those steps went. So we know it now. Anyway, I give it as a positive example, all of it. Essentially, long-term planning, where you want to be, and then you know which steps, which intermediate steps to take if you have a long-term plan. That's what I think very, very, very efficient, very effective. Know when to refuse. We talked about it already. In the beginning, okay, you feel honored, but at some point there will be too many things. So learn to know how to refuse. But be careful, because some people do nothing but refusing. You have to do your share. So you cannot always refuse. You have to do your share. People who always refuse very quickly get the reputation of people who always refuse. And they are not liked by colleagues. You have to be collegial. You have to do your fair share. But at some point, you have to refuse. Well, you have to refuse, like I told you about selecting students. Don't accept everybody. Well, look at the student, look at the achievements so far, talk to the student, see the motivation, and then you decide, am I taking this master's student or not? Is it going to be a pleasant experience or a struggle? Yes? If you think it's a struggle, you have a limited amount of time, you say, well, I'm sorry, but I don't think there is a match here. Yes? You refuse. You can do that too. Share everything. If you want to have more time, divide the routine tasks. And that's not only in terms of research. It's really, you can do the same at home with the family. When I first came to the Netherlands, this was the 1980s. In the Netherlands, it was the time of 1960s, you know, the proverbial 1960s, the cultural revolution in Europe. I was so surprised. I've seen demonstrations of, let's say, anti-war people, by the way, probably paid by the Soviet Union at that time, at least, you know, the money was funneled, demonstrating against nuclear weapons, about nuclear energy, etc. But I also saw demonstrations of feminists. I mean, they're really kind of violent feminists who were saying it's better to be lesbian than to, you know, have to do anything with men. And at one of the posters, I remember, posters or the transparents, there was a slogan: "It begins when you fall in his, when you sink in his arms. It ends with your arms in his sink, washing his dishes." Of course, I found it. Wow, what a miserable situation to be in, to wash the man's husband maybe dishes. That's terrible. But when you think about this, at some point you cannot help thinking, boy, you must have washed his dishes for the first time. Why didn't you object? Yes? If you don't object, if you don't take care of your own rights at home, and then you start complaining, okay, I all the time I have to wash his dishes. That's a ridiculous situation. So you have to, we have here ladies who are professionals, smart professionals who want to be scientists. Very quickly, you should have some kind of equilibrium in your personal, in the family. I cook, you wash the dishes. Or the other way, yes? I clean, you whatever, you fix that. Share somehow. So share those routine tasks. That will make you have more time. I cannot imagine, I mean, at some point it's really, there's this African proverb I remember from Lion King, the children movie. When you get hit with a stick, shame on him who hits you. But when you get hit twice or three times, shame on you that you allowed that, yes? So keep that in mind, that you have to divide those things that are unpleasant. And early on, don't wait until you are indeed waking up with your arms in his or her, I don't want to be sexist here, sink, yes? Make sure that you divide things. That is how you gain time. The next thing is know how to ask for advice. There is is my good friend. We both worked with Herb Simon, and he wrote a book. Advices for Winners. This is the website. Very thin paperback. Essentially, telling the advice that you should talk to people. Ask for advice. I may have mentioned him already. He's the author in that book of the saying, suppose you know 1,000 things, and this person here knows only 100 things. Probably among the 100, there are two things that you don't know. So talking to people, asking advice, especially people who know more than you, it's a great idea to save time. It saves you effort, saves you investigation. Interact with people. That's the important thing. I think you've seen this slide already. First step is important. When you are facing a big task, it looks overwhelming. And it's very human to say, okay, I'm starting from January on. That's when I'm starting seriously. Or you say, new semesters. Or next month I'm going to start it. Or after the weekend. It's important to just start. The longer you wait, the worse. So if you want to do something, start as soon as possible. That's another trick in time management. Here is a funny quote. This is not the Parkinson from the Parkinson disease. That's another one. He said or wrote, work expands so as to fill the time available for its completion. That advice I heard when I was young faculty. I wanted to do teaching well, seriously. And the advice was, limit the time you spend on teaching. I had two courses to teach per week. If I really wanted to teach well, I would probably spend 8 days each week on teaching, on preparing for my classes. I would have no time for anything else. So the advice is, when you are facing a task, set a time limit for it. I'm teaching on Wednesdays, okay. I'm preparing for that lecture, Wednesday lecture, on Tuesday, and only on Tuesday. If I don't finish preparation by Tuesday night, tough. The students will not get 120% out of me. My lecture is not going to be worth what they paid for the tuition here. But the alternative is, of course, that you do no research because you spend all your time on teaching. So set a limit and try to do your best within that limit. But if you don't finish, well, tough. I definitely think there is something in this quote. Work expands. It depends on how much time you devote to it. So set a time limit. So that's all I have to say about time management. A few good advice, tested. I learned about them, but also tested them. They work, definitely. So now, stress is very closely related to time management. The first thing is, of course, I mean it as a little bit as a joke. Remember the thing I told you about the Japanese student? He told me there are two types of Japanese people. Well, there are two types of stress also, because I'm simplifying it. But there is one that I called here positive. It's motivating, it's stimulating. It's like seeing your colleague getting an award and you feel the stress, I want that too. Or you feel the stress in a race. You are racing, running, you want to be the first. The stress is actually good, stimulates you. But there's also negative, paralyzing stress. When does it happen? Well, your child is sick. Your husband or your wife tells you he or she is unhappy in the marriage. You know, your marriage is falling apart. That's a stress that is really paralyzing. The stress caused by things that you cannot do anything about. Disease, all kinds of interpersonal issues. These things can essentially paralyze you and cause that that you will be working less efficiently. And a nice quote, stress is like spice. If you have a little bit, it's nice. But too much is, it may choke you. Yes, too much pepper, it will choke you. So we have to do something about this. Guaranteed, there will be more and more stress in your lives. Simple techniques for stress reduction. One technique is this. When I first came to Poland after many years, when I was young, I was listening to the third program, the Radio 3, the third program, Trójka. And when I came back, my car did not have that frequency because US frequencies are somewhat different. The radio I could receive here in Białystok on my car was Jedynka, program number one. And when I listened, driving and we started also listening at home, the same program because you get used to it, I thought, wow, Poland and Polish people became such lekomani, how do you translate this? People who are relying on medicine, because every second advertisement was about all kinds of medicine, syndromes, syndrom niespokojnych nóg. First time I heard about it in my life, that was in an advertisement. There was some medicine for it. And then, over the 20 years that I listened to the ads, I stopped listening to Program One, by the way, 2 years ago, completely. It became unlistenable. But before that, I listened to a lot of advertisements of medicine. And these are all medicine that helps you with stress. In that context, I remember when I was in high school, we went on an excursion to the mountains. And of course, boys are boys. We got some alcohol, and we were drinking alcohol in the evening in the house where we were housed. The teacher, I'm still in touch with her. We had just 50th anniversary of the high school graduation just a few weeks ago. I'm still in touch with her. She smelled the alcohol in the air. You know how to smell alcohol in the air. And she exited very gently without saying anything. But then we had this special classes on Godzina Wychowawcza. We talked about all kinds of issues related to our upbringing. And she said something that I found very wise. At that time I found it very wise, and I still remember it. She said, I understand people in their 40s, 50s, maybe 60s, they need alcohol to have good fun, good time. But you, at the age of 16 or 17, why would you need alcohol to have a good time? I found it really very, very wise. Not that I don't drink much alcohol, but I do drink alcohol. I'm not completely abstaining. But I think it was very wise of her to say that. So, this is not for you. That's what I want to say here. Not for you. You need to find something else. Because if you start relying on that stuff, who knows what it will do to you. It starts... I heard Mensen say something funny about the drugs that you smoke, marijuana, hashish. He said something very funny. In Polish, he said that it... Anyway, it screws around under your hat. Screws around with your. But it was a very funny expression. Just today, I heard it. So you don't want it, really. And you need to manage stress. There is no doubt you need to do something. If you don't do it, you will not survive, essentially. You need to learn how to handle that. So working from 8 to 6... Now, please know that it's not from 9 to 5. PhD students and scientists work longer. So if you have working hours, that's not as bad as it seems. Sometimes it's a good idea. 6 o'clock, okay, I'm hugging my husband, my wife, cooking together, joking, playing with children, doing something that completely clears my mind. That's one way of doing this. Exercising definitely is a good idea. What fits your busy schedule better? Exercising 1 hour a day or being dead 24 hours a day? So things, activities that you like most. In this case, of course, it's a joke. The zebra is painting the white stripes in different colors. It's supposed to relieve stress. Something that you like, whatever it is. They say about... people in the Silicon Valley, the famous place in the United States between San Jose and maybe San Francisco even, or Palo Alto and San Jose, you know, the place around Stanford where people do a lot of, there are many startups, a lot is happening. They say about them, they work hard, but they play hard. It's not unusual to see those people doing windsurfing. But the windsurfing where you kind of, you know, with the wind, you kind of make a flip. Or you're doing some, you know, flying on. So something that really makes you realize that things are relative. When you risk your life a little bit, you realize that you are just a small small little thing. That is very effective in relieving stress. So sports are very good. You also get healthier because you move. Yoga, I tried it for a couple of years when I was still a student in Poland. I really liked it. And it is something that you remember. It was Hatha yoga, just the exercises. For example, the relaxation techniques. I still can do it, you know, very simple rules. When you try to relax, you imagine that your hands are very heavy and warm, and it is a very funny thing. You get the warm feeling when the blood is circulating, and when it feels heavy, you are really relaxed, and you can cause relaxation by thinking about the warmth and heaviness. I do that sometimes when I have very important meetings or something that is very important. I can still do it. Amazing. Fishing, that's what I do. Monday, when I don't have my classes, I can work at home. Or if I'm too tired, if I'm overworked, overstressed, as a faculty member, you can afford it. Sometimes I just take my canoe on the roof and go to Biebrza and spend the whole day fishing, chasing pike and other predators, exercising at the same time and just completely relaxing. Dance, I may have mentioned that in this group already. It's something that my wife convinced me to do with her. I was 50 when we started, and boy, that was an incredible thing. I might have asked you already how many of you like dancing, yes? Did I ask you that? No. Ladies, how many of you like dancing? Look at that, at least 50%. Gentlemen, how many of you like dancing? Three, four. Usually, it's much less among the men than the women. I was joking, if I knew how much ladies like dancing, I would have learned when I was 15 and not 50. It's a very nice thing for a man, those of you who want to learn, to try, it's a miserable thing. The first year, you have to learn the rhythm, the music, the steps. You have to learn to lead your partner. That's one of the few situations in life where man is in control. The man decides where we are going, which steps we are making, right? Very few situations like this, and the ladies have to follow. My wife was very fast. Within a few weeks, she was dancing like if she was born a dancer. Because the guys she was dancing with, we were in a circle, we were changing partners in the class, in lessons. I was jealous because, you know, I couldn't do it. Then, you know, after a year maybe of hard work, it got nice. And I like it, actually. I don't tell my wife, I still say it's for her. I sacrifice, but I actually like it. It's a good, very relaxing activity. Nature is phenomenal. If you have not experienced it, do experience it. I was lucky because there was a teacher in my high school who, actually I always liked it, even in elementary school. Just take a tent, go somewhere, nature is phenomenal. You are suddenly, it's all yours. You feel very, very wealthy. Yes, it's all yours because you are somewhere. So these are my people. This is one of the retreats, by the way. We went, and this is, I think I showed you that slide already. Nature is anyway phenomenal. Sometimes you must walk a long way to come to your senses. That's a demotivatory or motivatory man. Quite good, quite actually nice. Hours of work, hours of rest. As I said, it's not as best as it seems when you decide what are your working hours. Just make sure that you, as a creative thinker, find there times where you are uninterrupted, times for thinking. So important. Do make sure that you have those hours free of any disturbance. This is a joke. There's a website with jokes about PhD studies. You should look at it as PhD students. That's, of course, a vicious circle because you stay up, because you played the whole day, nothing productive, so you stay up and then you are tired, you do nothing productive and it gets, you have to reset at some point, yes. Avoiding stressful situations, this is another thing that you can do, because some situations are stressful. If you are in here all the time, then you are never going to be there, and this is where the stress is, because you have to do it, and you have to do it now. And if you feel you cannot do it, then it's stressful. You will not manage. So try to follow that, organize your time better. Then you will not, you have less stress. Solve problems early. That's in our culture. That is an advice that definitely should think about this, because I feel that in our culture we are sometimes too permissive. So we try not to rock the boat, not to disturb too much. We are so different in that respect from the Dutch, from Germans also. But Germans are overall, as a culture, quite unpleasant about it. You come late, they will tell you, you know, in no uncertain words, how bad you are because you came late, you and this and that. In the Netherlands, people are organized, they come normally on time, coming on time, but they say, well, if you come late, you'd better come with donuts, with something nice for the others, then they will not be angry with you. So a little bit of relaxed approach. In any case, they will tell you right away and straight in your face when they don't like something. They will tell you when is your birthday, when you forget about something. They will tell you, well, it happens in the best families. You know, it's not a nice remark. In the Netherlands, it can happen. You call a friend and say, well, you know, there's this new theater play tonight, and I'd like to go to the theater. Would you like to join me? If you don't feel like going, what do you say in Poland? Well, you say, well, I have unfortunately other plans, my mother or my husband or the plumber is going to fix our plumbing, some nice excuse. In the Netherlands, it's not unusual to hear, well, you know, I'm reading an interesting book and I feel like I want to keep reading it tonight, yes. Not a very nice thing to hear. So that's not nice. I'm not telling you to become less nice than you are now. But if you encounter a situation of conflict, react earlier. For example, somebody comes to your office and puts his or her legs on your desk. You don't like it. In our culture, often we think, okay, you know, I'm not going to say anything. I notice that a lot. In the Netherlands, they will tell you right away, don't put your dirty shoes on my desk because it's there's a lot of dirt, germs, etc. Try to do at least something. Look at them, and at the leg, and at them again, so that they get the message. There are two types of women. First type is you can use whatever language you want. You can curse, you can use the stop words in them, and no problem. And the other type is you cannot do that. How do they do that? Some of you ladies are probably of that second type, maybe all of you. You cannot say bad words in their presence. How do they do that? Probably, you know, you say a bad word, they look at you. If that doesn't help, they will tell you something, maybe ironic, something that will give you a message. Don't do that. In their presence, don't do that. This is exactly what I'm telling you now. If you have a small thing not worth starting a war, at least send a message. Send a small message so that that doesn't grow into a big conflict when you have enough already. They've done it so many times that you suddenly, you know, have an explosion. And between the first time and the explosion, there are stressful situations because you feel, boy, his dirty shoes again on my desk. I just cleaned it, yes? So start early. In most languages, there are proverbs about it. In English, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. It's exactly the Polish, lepiej zapobiegać niż leczyć. The Dutch are a nation of farmers, so they say that their proverb is when a calf has drowned, they close the hole. Yes, so you know afterwards, too late. Recognize problems early. Sometimes you know you recognize dishonest people, dishonest boss. If you feel that you don't fit in that environment, just leave it. That's one way, because you cannot fix that environment. But if you can fix things, fix them early. You've seen that slide. If you love what you do, there's less stress, essentially, because you are having fun. I'm not sure if I already talked about it in another context, but in the Far East arts, including all arts, I think, including painting and calligraphy, but in the martial arts is so clear. Some of you may have seen this movie or a remake, politically correct remake, later on when the main hero was a girl and then black girl. But anyway, the idea is the same. The boy is being bullied by his friends, and he meets a Japanese, older Japanese man who trains him to teach him kung fu. And this is a scene where he is asking him to clean the cars. He's having a lot with old cars, and he tells him, "I want you to polish all the cars. 5 times this way, 5 times that way. And then 5 times this way, 5 times that way." The boy gets upset towards the end of the day. His arms are aching. And the guy says, "Okay, now block my punch." He tries to punch him, and the boy uses the same movement as in cleaning to block the punch. I may have told you about the kendo. I did kendo for a couple of years. I'm very adventurous always. Kendo is Japanese sword fighting. There was a grandmaster from Japan who came, and we thought, oh, he was going to teach us some technique where we can, with the sword, we can cut off the head nicely. And then, the first hour of the training, he told us to walk around all the time. We walk around, backwards and forwards, all the time. And he was watching us, giving us advice about small things. What was the idea? If you learn how to walk, that's so important in sports, the foundations. Why this introduction? Here is a metaphor that I heard once that I find you will remember it. A guy comes to a he is the speaker. He has an empty jar, glass jar like this, and takes a bag of stones, big stones. He puts them in the jar and says, "Is the jar full?" And you know the big stones are really almost to the top. People say, "Yes, it's full." He pulls out a bag of smaller stones and pours all those small stones. They find their way in between, in the cracks. And then, "Is this full now?" And so people say, "Yes, it's full." He pulls out a bag of sand and then pours that bag of sand. "Is it full now?" "No, now it's really full." And then he grabs a bottle of water, pours the water still. And the idea that he wanted to explain that, then is that if you start with big stones first, you can fit the smaller stones later. If you start with the sand and small stones, the big stones will not fit. What does it tell us? What does he want? What did he want to say? He wanted us. He says that the big important things, you have to have them organized in your life, mentally, the really important things. For small things, you'll find the place and find the time. That's the metaphor he wanted to say. And I think it's important in both time management and also stress management. Know what is important and organize your life around those big, important things. Some guiding light, as a researcher faculty, you are not doing it for money. If you wanted money, you would do something else. So you are doing it for some other things. Maybe you like teaching young people. Maybe you like to make contributions to the society, make the world better. There are some things that you want to do. And that's what I mean by the guiding light. Something that that will guide you, that provides you the motivation. People are, of course, much more important than things and than professional success. But that's, I don't think we disagree on that. If suddenly there's a big fire and the whole university burns down, it will survive as long as we live, because we'll teach on the grass field first. We will build some simple huts to teach. Computers, we'll buy new computers, and we will restore the university quickly. But if we are killed, the buildings are still there, that's the end of the university. Very simple thing to realize. if I were not religious, I'm religious, but if I were not religious, I would consider it just by calculation. You know, it's worth, you get so much out of it, out of the spiritual side, because it gives you the guiding light. It tells you what to do when things are happening, and things are going to be happening, guaranteed, then you pretty much always know what to do by the guiding lights. In terms of time management, there is a famous experiment in psychology. Psychology knows a handful of really important experiments. This is the experiment conducted in a seminary, a school for Catholic priests, where they divided randomly the seminarians, the students, into two groups. The only difference between the two groups was they told each of them, you have to go to the other building, like building A. This is building C. You have to go to building A, to some room number. And the first group was supposed to deliver a boring lecture on opportunities to make extra money in the seminary. The other group was told to deliver a sermon on Good Samaritan. All of you know the story of Good Samaritan? Anybody doesn't know that story? It looks like you know it. Surprisingly, I encounter in Poland, in classes, sometimes people don't know that story, which is surprising to me, because it doesn't matter whether somebody is religious or not, but these are foundations of our culture. This story is really something that we know, we should know, as educated people. So, Good Samaritan, as you remember, he was wounded by some thieves, and there is a priest passing by, looking at him going on. There is some rabbi, doesn't stop. But then a Samaritan, a person of lesser standing, they were looked down upon by the Jews, stops and helps the guy, dresses his wounds, brings him to an inn, leaves some money to be taken care for. So an inspiring story, asking essentially, who is your neighbor? Yes, who was the neighbor of this wounded man? Now, in the experiment, they told them to go deliver the lecture, and they had to pass through a hallway like here, between A and C. You know that hallway, because I think that the doors are going to be closed now, so you have to walk that way. There was an actor there, in that narrow passage, who was pretending to have some problems, you know, on the ground, you know, his heart, something was really going wrong with him. He needed help. And they studied who of those seminarians stops to help them, this guy. And apparently there was no significant difference between the two groups of seminarians, even though the second group was reminded about the story of the Good Samaritan. But there was one variable that was significant, I understand, is how much time they had, because they gave them whatever, between 5 and 15 minutes time. They say, oh, it starts in 5 minutes, so you better get running. Or it starts in 15 minutes, so there's some time to go there. So the time was the most predictive factor whether they will stop to help the guy, and not the knowledge of Good Samaritan. And that happened among seminarians, whom you would expect to be more behaving like a Good Samaritan towards another human being. Very interesting experiment telling us about the nature of humans. Why am I telling that now? Don't let time management impact you too much. Remain human, of course. You have to be efficient, the time, etc. But when it's needed, behave like a human. This is there is a movie, Idiocracy. In Polish, I think it's Idiokracja or Idiotokracja. It's an old movie, probably 1980s, I would think. And Maybe the movie itself is not the top shelf, the top tier, but the idea is wonderful. We don't have the time, unfortunately, here to watch it together, but watch that piece, the opening sequence. It's amazingly nice. It shows essentially the world in 2500. All of us think that it's going to be a world in which science, clean, safe, healthy world. They turn it around. They say the way we multiply, the way we have children, usually people who are educated don't have enough children, and people who are uneducated, people with all kinds of defects, I mean defects in terms of their mentality, they tend to have a lot of children. It's shown in the opening sequence. That's a couple that has a very high IQ, very intelligent, and their conversation goes like, no, we want to have children, but later when we have developed our career, and then they say, well, having children now doesn't make any sense in these economic conditions, and they keep doing this until they decide to have children, and then they cannot have children. And then the guy dies masturbating to get semen for artificial insemination. And she says, oh, I'm keeping the eggs frozen in case a nice guy comes across. So anyway, this is a good story about the world, but also don't wait with the really important things like family. At least if you want to have a family, then don't wait too long because the biological clock is ticking and you have to start somewhere. And this is very, very, this is a big stone. You will find a room for smaller stones, don't worry, you finish your PhD. I had my first son before I started my PhD studies, second born when I was in the middle, and the third was born when right a few months after I graduated. So you can do it, it's possible. Mission statement, we talked about this. Covey, in another book, advises to have a personal mission statement, like a family can have it. It's another book, Secrets of Highly Efficient, Highly Effective Families. How can you help others? And we have still a few, 5 minutes. I guess friendships, be a good colleague. You are a team member and you should feel responsible for their success. It's wise to help people, but of course help within like very often it happens among not doctoral students, but earlier, that people help each other. Like they give them, they help them at doing the exam. They give them the homework to look at, etc. This is not the type of help that I would advise. So don't be a buddy. Help them really. Help them to learn. Be a good friend. Brown nosing. We talked about this, I think. Brown nosing is in Polish. Wazeliniarstwo. Brown nosing is because you put your nose, in a place of your boss where it's a little brown. That's I guess the idea. Avoid it because it's not a good idea. People other people hate it when they see that. So when you do it, the other people will hate it to look at that. Don't like you. Healthy environment, I think we talked about this. So again, you can help, for example, your students in the future to have a healthy environment, which will be less stressful. Team building, you've seen the slide just last week. That also helps for people to feel less stress. You've seen this one also. That's also a way of helping people to feel better. You've seen this one. You've seen this one also, keep your relationships, that also is kind of nice, makes your life less stressful. So, wow, I finished, very nice. So, the concluding remarks, have a calendar. That's, I really admire people who don't have a calendar. Yes, I really admire you, but I suspect that you will probably yield because there will be too many things. You have to write it down. And I have a calendar precisely because it allows me not to remember things. I have it written down. I don't need to think about them. remember what is important. So, you know, make sure that you put only important things in your calendar. Make appointments with yourself. That's the idea of the long periods of time where you can think carefully. Know when to refuse and ask for advice. This is also very effective. Love what you are doing, because then you're not going to be stressed. A simple motivation like I wanted ice cream until I have finished this section of the paper. You know, something simple that also helps. That also works. Stress is a part of life. It motivates us, allows us to feel that we are alive. Spices up our life, of course, which is very nice. But some types of stress are unpleasant, unhealthy and harmful to us. We want to avoid them somehow. We need to defend against them. And it's probably best to organize your life in such a way that it avoids those sources of stress. You cannot avoid them all of them, because things happen. I mentioned disease, I mentioned problem in families, relationships. These are really killers. And they may happen. No matter what you do, it may happen. It doesn't only depend on you. So you have to be somehow prepared for that and learn to live with that and have tools to help you cope with that.
Once I heard a quote that not the situation is stressful, but our approach to the situation can be stressful. Maybe. We should think about how the situation is affecting us.
Could be, although I could probably argue with that. Your child is sick, very, very sick.
Of course, there is other situation that...
Your husband tells you,
should be.
I've had it. It goes out, yes.
Yeah, but sometimes we are stressed about situations that are just simple situations.
Yes.
But we are making this situation stressful.
Yes, yes. But even in those things that I mentioned, I agree with you here, even in those situations that I mentioned, you can also, if you have some kind of, you know, guiding light, you realize, you know, things happen. As they say in English, shit happens, right? That's in Forrest Gump, for example. Then that's also a matter of attitude. Although some things are really very difficult to handle. The example I gave, that's very hard, of course. That's it. The last meeting next week is going to be focusing on ethics in science. I hope we'll have also fun. The topic may seem boring, but it's not as boring, I think, as it looks. Thank you very much. I think I have finished on time.